Ma'ayad ayad nanga adla ka uban. Hello, everyone. This is Cheryl Sampson Ramirez of the Philippine X in Wellness podcast. I'm excited to bring to you all season 5. Thank you so much for your support in just listening, tuning in as we talk about resources and building our health and wellness community with our diaspora and allies. For this introductory episode, we are going to be talking with Dr. Gina Dapul Hidalgo, a board-certified adult and pediatric allergist in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. She's also the founder and CEO of Family Center for Allergy and Asthma in Rockville, Maryland. Co-hosting this episode with me is our very own Sheena Katz. If you've ever wondered which allergy medicine to take at your local pharmacist, what to do when it comes to air filters and HEPA filters, or just even also how to survive post-wildfires in your areas, this is the episode for you to tune into. I hope that you enjoy this episode. Maayad ayad nanga adla ka uban. We've made it to our 5th season for the Philippine X and Wellness podcast. Yay! We're excited to bring you more health and wellness episodes this season and can't wait to share what we have in store. I'm one of your hosts, Cheryl Sampson Ramirez, and my pronouns are she, her, sha. For this episode's audio description, currently I am wearing a fuzzy light green sweater. My hair is pulled back halfway. My hair is long and black, and I have silver headphones that sit over my ears, and I am also in front of a black background. Joining me on this episode is my co-host, Sheena Katz.
Hello, everybody. This is Sheena Katz. My pronouns are she and her. For my audio description, I am wearing a blue and black blouse. My hair is down and I'm sitting in front of a blue and gold impressionist painting behind me. Following our last episode, Know Your Rights, with family law and immigration lawyer Cheryl Deptowicz Diaz of Diaz Law Firm and Chikaina Diokeras, senior organizer of Philippine Workers Center. Today, we will be welcoming back our triathlon and marathons episode in season 3, board-certified adult and pediatric allergist, Dr. Gina Dapul Hidalgo.
Hello!
Welcome back!
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me back, Cheryl and Sheena. This is such an honor. So thank you for inviting me back.
We are thrilled you're back. And as mentioned in previous episodes, all views discussed are for informational and educational purposes only. It is not meant to be medical advice, nor does it constitute therapy or professional advice. Always consult with your healthcare practitioner, especially before starting any exercise or new health program or a qualified mental health professional for your particular condition.
Without further ado, we'd like to welcome back to our podcast, Dr. Gina Dapul Hidalgo. It's great to have you back on, Dr. Gina.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me back.
Now, if you recall from season 3, since you're now a veteran to this, we typically like to open our episodes with knowing where our guests are from. Can you remind our community where both sides of your family are from and where are you currently streaming from at the moment?
Yes. So my mom is from Pangasinan and my dad is from Batangas. And I'm currently streaming from Montgomery County, Maryland, which is in the Washington, D.C. metro area. And yes, to describe my description, I actually forgot this earlier. I'm wearing a pink dress with a gold necklace. I have on the old Apple iPod connectors. There is a tree in my background, as well as a painting with a lady in a yellow dress. And my hair is black and long, and I have one side of it in front of me right now.
Awesome. Great job at the audio description. I know you're new to this. So since the fourth episode of season three, our triathlons and marathons episode, you're now the founder and CEO of Family Center for Allergy and Asthma in Rockville, Maryland, Gina. Congratulations for opening up your own clinic.
Yes, thank you.
And we're just happy to also expand in having more folks throughout the diaspora from here on the West Coast to the East Coast, hopefully globally someday. So remind us of your origin story. What were the experiences in your life that inspired you to become a board-certified adult and pediatric allergist? I know in our previous episode, when we were talking about triathlons and marathons, we didn't actually get to delve in particularly into your personal background or your career path. So, well, why don't we start with there? What inspired you to become a board-certified adult and pediatric allergist?
Yes, so well, that's a great question. And actually, it has to do with family history and personal history. So there's a lot of asthma and allergies and eczema that's in my family. I grew up with several of these conditions myself. So having experienced it and really know what it's like to live with these conditions, it inspired me to really look into it as something to specialize in. And so when I was in my residency training, where I trained in Brooklyn, I did an elective rotation, and this was in allergy immunology. And when I finally saw what it meant, well, we do skin testing and we help people with their breathing tests and, you know, help with their asthma, I fell in love with it. And I realized these are the patients and the people that I want to serve, because it's people like myself, like my family members. And if I can help, you know, anybody with these conditions, I can do a great job of it and really be able to serve them to the best of my ability, because I too have them.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I think one of the reasons why we wanted to bring you back on to the podcast is because, you know, Sheena and I have talked about how we deal with allergies. And you mentioned, as you opened up to talk about your career pathway, how you've seen a lot of allergies, asthma, and eczema in your family. I hope that we're able to unpack that and determine why we're seeing a lot of that in our community. But before we delve into that, why don't we just first start with defining what are allergies versus allergic rhinitis. Am I pronouncing that right?
Yes.
And also why we're focusing on allergies and asthma for this episode.
Yes. So no, great way to start, because that'll help set the tone for what we'll be talking about. So allergies in general are when your body is overreacting to a harmless substance. And so your body thinks pollen, dust mite, cats, dogs, foods, you know, pets, and drugs. It just overreacts to them abnormally. And it's like, oh, danger, danger. When it's really a very harmless substance that you're coming into contact with or that you're breathing. And so the reason why today we'll focus on allergic rhinitis specifically is because that is what is upcoming here in the East Coast, and I'm sure throughout the country, as we, you know, come upon our spring pollen season. And so this is when pollen will affect your nose, your eyes, and because your nose is connected to your lungs, that is why it's what we call one airway. It just gets a different name when it's stuffy, runny nose, sneezing, itchy nose, itchy, watery eyes, versus when it's affecting down below from your neck down. But inflammation is this like swelling and mucus. So it gets called allergic rhinitis when it's the neck up. But if it's swelling and mucus from the neck down, that's where it gets called asthma. And so they're connected to each other by this one airway, we call it. And so that's why they come together for many people, like myself. and so it's so important to understand, well, how are the nose connected to your lungs so that you can really help to empower yourself to take care of what's going on and that you live a better quality of life? So hopefully that answered the question.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was asking Dr. Gina like, what should we name this episode? And especially because she has so many specialties within this realm. And now that explains why we together named it allergies and asthma, because we're talking about the upper and lower respiratory system.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I was also just thinking when you were talking, like, we should probably name it something fun in general. Maybe something like spring, spores, sneezing, and snoring.
Yes, for sure.
That's really catchy. So tell us more about your family center for allergy and asthma in Rockville, Maryland. You know, I know we know the circumstances that inspired you to pursue a medical degree specializing in allergies, but is there also a story behind focusing your family center on asthma in addition to allergies, besides experiencing it?
Yes, yes. So it's interesting that I came up with the name. It's because actually, as a board certified allergist, we are one of the few specialists that can take care of people of all ages. So I actually see infants all the way to adults. And the name family encompasses that, because not everyone would think, oh, do you see kids? And patients will ask me, oh, do you see adults? Can you see my mother? You know, depending on if we're talking about drug allergies or other hives and different conditions. So the family center came from that. But then the reason I called it allergies and asthma is because allergies encompasses all these things from food allergies, right? Drug allergies, allergic rhinitis, the eczema, because that there's a component of, you know, allergic conditions there. But then asthma, which not many people know about, that we actually manage that as well. So as I mentioned earlier, because the two are connected, upper and lower airway, not many people know that an allergist can take care of your asthma. So sometimes they'll go to a pulmonologist or another lung doctor or another specialist to take care of their breathing, when really, because the two come together, I really wanted to educate, you know, our local community and say, oh, look, you've got allergies and you also have breathing. Come see me, because I help manage and take care of both. So it's really more to help educate everybody to know, oh, well, I didn't know that. And even my staff will say, oh, I didn't know that an allergist did all of this. You know, we see a pulmonologist or a pediatric pulmonologist. And I'm like, no, I take care of it all. So the idea is to, even by the name of the practice, to be able to help people know, oh, wow, family means all ages and infants all the way up to adults to these different allergic conditions, including asthma.
Now, will you look at asthma differently from a pulmonologist's approach in looking at it? Is there a difference between the way you'll address it?
Yes, yes. So no, I look at it, we look at it together from the respiratory perspective, and we can manage it with the same medicines and treatments, including inhalers and injection medicines now that are available. But the difference is, if there is an allergic component to the asthma, that's where I'm able to narrow down and kind of identify, well, what's the trigger to that? Right? We know many people who say, oh, when I'm around cats or dogs, or when it's pollen season out, or when I'm around a lot of dust and carpets. And so we as allergists will address the avoidance measure after we identify what's going on. Whereas a pulmonologist will look at it from, these are the lungs and how to manage it that way. But if there's any allergic component, we can actually delve in a little bit deeper to identify it and help avoid, because avoidance is key when you know what your triggers are.
That makes sense, actually, when you break it down that way.
Yeah.
Good, good. I'm glad.
Yeah. So let's contextualize allergies and asthma within the Filipino and Philippine X community, given that this is Philippine X and Wellness. So when it comes to our community, you know, what are the common allergies that you may see that we encounter, if any? And similarly, you know, as it pertains to asthma, are there certain triggers or lifestyle habits that contribute to the prevalence of asthma in our community?
So it's actually similar to the general population. And I tried to look at studies on this, but there's not many that break down, you know, Filipino, Filipino American. But so in general, those who suffer from this, it's usually allergens such as pollen. So there's three types. There's tree pollen, grass pollen, and weed pollen. There are pet dander, like cats and dogs, dust mite, which are these year-round allergens as well, and mold spores. So those are the major ones, and we break it down depending on if it's year-round, which is perennial, or seasonal, which are the pollen and the mold spores. So that's one thing. In terms of asthma triggers, so these can be anything from, and if you know of anyone who has this, they'll say, yes, that causes me to have some coughing, wheezing, shortness of breath, trouble breathing, chest tightness. It can be things like getting sick with a cold, right? So a viral illness, exercise. So that can trigger your airways to go and kind of get tight. Allergens, like we talked about, cold air. So that's very common here on the East Coast, where when winter comes, people will say, when I go outside, I feel like my asthma is kicking in. So cold air can be a trigger. And irritants, such as cigarette smoke, strong fragrances, impurities in the air. So these can trigger the asthma symptoms. And then we talked about what can trigger the allergic rhinitis.
Can you expand on exercise? When you say exercise triggering asthma, what do you mean by that?
So in general, most people can exercise, right? Can run, play pickleball, any of these, you know, activities that, you know, you'd like to participate with, even sports, soccer, all these things. But for patients with asthma, it can actually be a trigger for the symptoms, meaning that the exercise will cause their airways to clamp down and kind of get smaller and tight. For whatever reason, you know, whether it's the genetic component or the environmental component, for some people, it actually happens where, you know, I have a bunch of athletes who are runners, whether they're cross country or track. And then when they're outside running during pollen season, that's like a recipe for having symptoms. So again, it's just a different trigger for what causes the coughing, the wheezing, the shortness of breath, and exercise is definitely one of them.
Okay. And you were talking also about impurities. You know, recently in California and then also in Maui, you know, they had dealt with similarly wildfires. And so I definitely ran into people that were really strong about wearing their N95 masks because they also had asthma and were worried about how their air passages were going to be impacted by what was coming in the air. So
yes, definitely. I would say that the wildfire, you know, pollutants that can come from that and the irritants, we had them also here on the East Coast from Canada, which is about a year and a half ago. And yes, definitely in Hawaii, I actually had a patient who had lived out in Maui for a couple months and then was affected by, you know, the wildfires. When she moved back here to the Maryland and East Coast area, she then developed asthma, which is something she never had before. So she only had allergies with the seasons and around pets and dust mite. But then after coming back and being exposed to that, she now had to, you know, be on additional medication to help her symptoms because for whatever reason, it now affected her lower airway. So yes, it is something where if wearing a mask, getting air purifiers, anything to really help filter out what you're breathing in, because we're not meant to breathe in these types of particles.
I mean, I even noticed that when I was in the Philippines with my dad years back, that I developed, I don't know if it was an asthma or a cough from all the diesel that was being released off of the motorbikes. And I've heard that similar things are being experienced in like other countries that where there's a high number of motorbikes in their cities and they're running on diesel as well.
Yes, I'm not surprised. You know, it's an irritant, it's an impurity and particulate matter that are in the air. Again, these are microscopic, meaning we can't see them, but they can affect our airways if we breathe them in. So yes, even more recently, they're now really limiting things like gas stoves here inside homes and making them more electric because we are now, you know, finding that maybe that's causing some respiratory issues. So I'm not surprised that, yes, being exposed, you know, I remember that on the jeepneys and in Manila, like, oh my gosh, there's so much. And people wear, you know, scarves and masks. It's kind of already like an understood thing that, you know, we're covering up to prevent ourselves from reading that thing.
And when we were preparing for this show, Gina, you also mentioned your experience with sleeping on pillows. That, can you share that one? Because I thought it was pretty fascinating when you talked about it.
Yes. So, you know, I was visiting my Lola in Alitatag, Batangas. So, you know, they live out in the province and stayed at their house. And clearly, because I'm affected by dust mites, when we had slept on the beds, I had trouble breathing, not only from my nose, but from my lungs. And I was like, what is going on here? And it turns out it was likely, you know, some old pillows, maybe decades old. And, you know, I could not sleep. And because of that, I actually had to go to another relative's house and, you know, find ways to be able to breathe because I couldn't sleep on that particular mattress and a pillow. And it really impacts your life when you can't breathe and you're at your Lola's house. And I'm like, oh, sorry, Lola, I can't. There's nothing I could do here. So, yes, had to stay with another relative because of this trigger that caused my, you know, allergies and my asthma. And by staying at the other house for a couple nights, it helped. I still came back to, you know, my Lola's and hung out there. But, you know, once you find out things that cause you to have these symptoms, the idea is to try to identify that if possible, and then really try to avoid so that you're not continuously putting yourself in a situation where it's going to cause you to have problems breathing.
Yeah, I mean, that's an important story, I think, to share, because I don't think people know, like, how often you're supposed to change out your pillows or your mattresses. Like, you know, in situations like that, you know, what kind of education do you think, in hindsight, you probably might have shared with your Lola?
Maybe not decades old pillows, you know, but she clean a lot all the time. She'll take the one list and she's just cleaning. But really, when you're putting your head on your pillow and this mattress that's been there for forever, it harbors dust mites. And because these dust mites are year round and they are global, you can be in any country and be affected by it. Again, it means that for people's bodies, you're overreacting to something that most people don't react to, right? So you could sleep on a dust mite covered pillow and be fine. But for people who have allergies, this is when it becomes problematic.
So for you, like if you had a patient that also had a dust mite allergy, how often would you tell them to change out their pillows or their mattress?
Yes. So actually, one of the recommendations we make if we know that you are dust mite allergic is to recommend getting these covers. And so they're little zipped up covers that go around your pillows and your mattress, and it helps to lock and trap the dust mites in there. And then you'll put your pillowcase on top, your fitted sheet on top of the mattress, and then you wash those sheets and pillowcases in hot water once a week because you're still getting rid of any dust mites that might be forming on top. And so once we identify it, well, we tell patients this is how we avoid it. And even to the extent that if you're traveling, some patients will take dust mite covers with them because you can even, you know, go to a hotel room and you're wondering, oh my gosh, I never had symptoms at home. But it's because you're in a hotel room that doesn't have dust mite covers and you're now sleeping on them. So, you know, things like that, which once you implement measures and you're like, oh, I'm taking my dust mite cover with me, you take it off once you leave the hotel room or a friend's house. You know, you just bring the things that you know will help you breathe, depending on the situation that you're in.
Wow. That is such a good recommendation because I didn't even know it existed until just right now.
Exactly. And that's why my goal is to really, you know, educate everyone about what things may be happening. And that way you can just live, you know, a healthy life with really good quality. And but until you know it, right, you just don't recognize. Well, like, oh, this is normal for me. You know, patients will say that. They'll say, oh, I've taken my antihistamine for like 15 years. I'm like, you know, I'm glad you came to see me because now we can take some steps to be able to help you out by identifying, avoiding, and talking about, you know, various options. So yes, the thing is, we kind of resigned ourselves to being like, oh, this is my life. Like, this is normal for me when it's really not normal. Patients have, you know, gotten used to like being this way. And so, yes, that's my goal, is to spread the word and say, look, get tested, figure it out, and see how we can help.
That's incredible. And speaking of what feels kind of normal, in preparation for this episode, Cheryl and I actually talked about experiencing sinus problems regularly, especially during the change in seasons. Is there anything that we can do to fortify our immune systems and prevent our allergies from occurring or worsening during seasonal changes? Can you grow out of your allergies or asthma?
So it's interesting because a lot of it actually has to do with both your genetics, meaning is there a family history of this, right, that gets passed down, but also your environment. So depending on where you live, right, you may not have symptoms if you're in the middle of the desert in LA, but if you move to, for example, here, DC, Maryland, where trees are everywhere, patients will say, I never had problems when I lived on the West Coast, but a couple years after moving here, I'm like, having these seasonal symptoms. So, yes, I would say some of the recommendations I would recommend to any listener and anyone who's interested is number one, schedule an appointment to see your local board certified allergist. And the reason I say that is because locally, this is where we're able to identify what are the local allergens to your area, right? So I test for the ones, the trees, grass, or weed pollen, as well as the year-round things here in the DC, Maryland, as well as the East Coast. But if you see somebody in California or Illinois, they will test for the pollen and things that are local to that area. So again, once you know what that is, then you can help identify the trigger with what we do, it's called skin testing. So it's a little plastic scratch for those of you who may not be familiar with it. And it really is scratching your skin with the allergens that we're testing, whether it's the pollen, the dust mite, the cat dog, the mold. And then we either place it on your forearm, and I'm putting a little, my hand on the forearm, or we can do it on your back. And then we wait 15 minutes to see what you react to. So it's really fun. And that's why I enjoy it, because then it really helps us to, pinpoint what it is that triggers your symptoms. And it usually correlates very well. So when patients say, oh, it's the spring, then we know it's either tree or grass pollen, if they know it's year round. And for many people who have pets, they know it's their pets and we're confirming it. And also giving them options, because they usually say, do anything to me because I'm keeping my dog or keeping my cat. And so, yes, we're not recommending to avoid anything, but at least we can talk about options moving forward. Did that answer your question or did I go off?
Yes, no, that answered my question. And as a follow-up question, actually, for the allergy test that you mentioned, how long does that process take for, our listeners who haven't taken it yet?
Oh, so typically it's about 15 minutes. So a little plastic scratch with all on the liquid, there's liquid on the little tips of the plastic. And then we wait 15 minutes because, again, it's trying to find out if you have made something that we call allergic antibodies to these allergens, right? So, again, it's not normal to have these allergic antibodies, but patients who see us do. And so that's how we can identify it with these little scratches. We wait 15 minutes. And then see if you get a little red, itchy spot, kind of resembles a mosquito bite. So we do anticipate some itching, but it is a temporary response. So it tends to go away after about 20 or 30 minutes. But that's how we can figure out what are these things that you are allergic to. I did want to come back to something because I forgot to address this. So what are some other things? So a nice helpful tip is actually to start taking the medicines before your pollen season begins. So for us here, in the past, it used to be that we can say, oh, by March, it starts to kick in. And we would tell patients, start taking your medicines around February 14th, because then it gives your body time for the medicine to kick in and it prevents the symptoms from really peaking come March, April, and May. Our pollen seasons are actually moving earlier because we haven't had as many winters or as severe, cold weather that we've had in the past. So actually in 2024, we had like a blip of an 80-degree day in January. And we're like, oh, that's unusual. And pollen season started early. So we had a peak end of February into March, and then another peak in April and May for our tree pollen. So if you start it early, it's easier to prevent the symptoms, as you were asking, versus once you're already full blown, right? With your eyes, your nose, your breathing, it's much harder to get under control at that point because it's almost like too late. But if you prevent it, then that's a way to really get ahead of it. Another thing, my tip number. So first one is schedule an appointment with your board certified allergist. Number two is start taking your medicines before the season begins. Number three, monitor your local pollen counts. And so there's a great website. It's pollen.aaaai.org. So that's four A's and an I.org /#/. And actually, this is a national website. And, you know, I looked on it earlier. They have some in Northern Cali, all throughout the United States. We have a great local station here in DC. And so there are volunteer allergists that will actually, you know, do the pollen counts. And I actually did this in Brooklyn where I did my training. So as part of our training, we had to, you know, get the rods from the roof, look at it under a microscope, and literally count all the pollen that was there. So it's somebody who's manually counting the pollen and then reporting it to the local, you know, media reports. So this particular website is a great, accurate one. It's sponsored by the American Academy of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology. So you can click on your state and see where the local pollen counters are. So hopefully that's helpful. Last two tips, and these are really good, helpful things, is to keep your windows closed during peak pollen season. And it may not sound like a big deal, but many people are like, I love fresh air. Right? And we're like, no, not during peak pollen season, because you're letting that microscopic pollen come in. So yes, windows closed during peak season. And the last one, number five, would be to change and wash your clothes after you've spent time outdoors, right? If you've done any outdoor activities, if you play a sport or you do a walk every day, just come home, take a shower, wash off all that pollen. And you definitely want to try to shower at night so that you can remove the pollen from your body, your hair, your clothes, so it keeps it off the bedding when you go to sleep at night too. So hopefully those tips will be helpful in, you know, decreasing your symptoms and preventing it from getting worse during these pollen seasons.
Those are super helpful. Thank you. We were writing them down, I'm sure you saw.
I wanted to ask you, Gina, about the skin testing, because how often are people going to get tested for allergies? I know I personally did some skin testing, and as we were preparing for the show, I was mentioning to you that I had so many things that came up in the environment and all these foods that came up where I was like, this test is culturally insensitive. I'm not going to cut sesame and salmon out of my diet. But that's for another episode. You know, there's also a part of me that was like, should I move? You know, because there's all these things in the environment that would naturally trigger, right? Yes. How often are we supposed to take these, right?
Yes. So really, I think it's dependent on your symptoms and if anything changes. So for us, I typically, you know, if I see a person for the first time, I might test them and then we never test again. For others, if, you know, there's something new in the environment, for example, and you're like, I never had problems around my pets, but now that I have a new one, or my partner has one and now I'm having symptoms, it might be time to say, look, let's just see, all of a sudden you now develop this allergic antibody. So for the environment, it's really dependent on your symptoms. And for foods, that's a definite, you know, topic for another day, but we typically don't test for foods unless you have symptoms to it. So at least that's how I practice, because if you otherwise, you know, drink milk, eat eggs, peanuts, tree nuts, wheat, soy, fish, and shellfish, those are the top food groups, then there's no reason to test you for it because you're eating it and you're not having a problem. On the other side, though, is if you do have symptoms, right? All of a sudden you eat a peanut, you're having swelling, hives, trouble breathing, nausea, vomiting, you know, feeling like you're going to pass out, then that's a reason to see the allergist and get tested for those particular foods if there's a suspicion that you have a reaction to it. So everyone practices differently, but that's typically how I do it. So I don't test patients like randomly, but it's to get an answer. And then if we have the answer, great, we might not have to do it again ever. But if something changes, then it's worth saying, oh, I wonder if I'm now allergic to that, so that we can figure it out and make recommendations.
Got it. And some people have hypoallergenic dogs and cats. Have you? Right?
Actually,
what,
yes.
What are your thoughts on that? Like, I think poodles are supposed to be hypoallergenic. For example, when they have those cats that are supposed to be also?
Yes. So actually, that's on my handouts that I give to patients. It's like the first sentence that says, contrary to popular belief, there is no such thing as a hypoallergenic, cat or dog. But there can be some breeds that you react less to than others. Right? So some allergenic ones might be for some patients, like golden retrievers and Labradors, but, you know, Labradoodles or mixed breeds, some patients will say, oh, I'm not so, you know, symptomatic around them. So I always caution patients on saying, oh, I have a hypoallergenic dog, or because I've had it happen many times. They'll say, I went to my aunt's house who said she has a hypoallergenic dog and my asthma was acting up. I was like, I know, because there's no such thing.
No. Interesting. Thank you for dispelling that.
Yes, but again, there can be some breeds that you are fine with and you have no symptoms, but others that you're like, oh, clearly every time I know I'm going to this person's house, I might need to pre-medicate, meaning take something beforehand so that your symptoms don't really act up while you're there. Does that answer the question?
Yes. I appreciate you weighing in on that, having an expert here to help us, you know, fact check. Okay. Let's talk about climate change, because climate change actually has impacted a lot of folks' allergies. People that didn't have allergies before all of a sudden have them. The environment's changing all over the globe, and there's no escaping it. With California, we had our wildfires. You mentioned in Canada how you were impacted by the Canadian wildfires in Hawaii. They also had the wildfires in Lahaina. That to say, we now have seen an uptick in sales amongst air purifiers, right? And masks as well, post-COVID. Now let's talk about air purifiers and HEPA filters as they relate to this topic of allergies and asthma. What should we be looking for and what do you use?
So to first clarify what HEPA filter, HEPA stands for, it's a high efficiency particulate air filter, right? So, you know, say HEPA moving forward. But what those do is that it traps airborne allergens and particles, such as the pollen that might enter your homes, dust that's floating in the air, pet dander from pets. And it helps to improve the indoor air quality of what you're breathing in. So what it does, it contributes to better sleep and better quality of life, better productivity. So yes, they are little units that you plug into the wall. Pre-COVID, it used to be much less expensive. And I used to be able to tell patients, oh, you know, you can get one for $60, you know, online. Now, you know, maybe $200 if you're lucky.
$60, wow.
Yes, not anymore, right? But some really cost-effective brands might be Honeywell, which is a good brand that even I have. But they do make some super fancy ones. For example, there's one called Rabbit Air, like the rabbit, R-A-B-B-I-T. And it actually has like a painting where you can choose the design on it. And so it can be like a piece of artwork that purifies your air in your home. So that's more on like the higher end side if you want something, you know, aesthetically pleasing. So yes, these are great options for, you know, really helping to filter out these particles and helping patients breathe.
And how often should we be changing the filters on these? I know also during the wildfires, I had a coworker that was also advising, well, since you're using air purifiers, you should also consider changing out your cabin air filter in your car, and maybe for folks that rent, even asking your landlords if they could change out the filters in their AC units, or even for folks that own, right? So how often should we be practicing that?
So I would say at a minimum, when the purifiers have the red light on it. And I am guilty of it myself, where I'm like, oh, it's red, and have not changed it. But it does indicate that it's probably time for a new filter because that's the whole purpose, right? It will light up when we need to update that and change it. So yes, I would leave it to the unit. And again, depending on how much is being filtered, maybe you do it every 3 to 6 months. Or if you're not using it during a certain period of time, maybe it's just once a year. So really just paying attention to that particular unit that you have and kind of honoring when it says, oh, time to change.
Okay. And same thing with air conditioning units, cabin air filters for people that drive.
So I don't know of any real recommendations or data for those. However, and even now, I don't recommend it all the time, but for example, if you have air ducts, that heat your system, your house, your apartment, that if there's a way to get that cleaned out, they have companies that come in and kind of suction and vacuum these ducts because they're the same things that will, spew out the air and you're breathing that. So the more that there's in, the more particles and impurities that are there is something that you're breathing in. So they have companies out here that do that, and they're like, oh, we're allergy friendly. So those are the ones that I kind of recommend to my patients and say, look, it's not something I would recommend all the time, but if you notice, yeah, symptoms are better when I shut the vent or close the vent, then it's worth saying, look, maybe we just got to clean it out and figure out what's going on in there.
Got it. Okay, let's talk about medication because you mentioned medication in your tips about starting medication early on. I know, for example, when I go to the pharmacy, I'll look at the shelf and try to figure out which one to get, right? You have Claritin, you have Zizol, you have maybe I'm missing something in between, Benadryl. And then there's Flonase, and then there's for folks with asthma, there's the inhaler. And then for those with severe asthma, there's nebulizers. Let's just start with even your typical allergy medicine because there's even the 24-hour relief. And where do we even start to know what to take, where to begin?
Yes, no, and this is kind of the main question because a lot of these are now over the counter, right? So in the past, these used to be prescription. So I had to write prescriptions for Zizol, and that went over the counter in 2017. Even Claritin and Allegra and Zyrtec.
Allegra, yes,
At some point,
Zyrtec, yes.
yeah, Zyrtec was the other one, were prescription in the past. And Allegra, I believe, went OTC over the counter in 2011. So I was in training and I was like, oh my gosh, now there's another one over the counter. So really what these antihistamines do is that they block histamine, and that's the main chemical that causes some of the itching and allergy symptoms. So antihistamines, and really I have no preference for them. It's just really what works for the patient. And so some people say, oh, this one makes me drowsy, or this one doesn't work as well. So it's whatever works, and they typically work for 24 hours. So that's why, you can buy them and a 30-day pack will last you a month. But the one thing I would caution on is getting the ones that have the D attached to it. So if you've ever seen those, Allegra D, Zyrtec D, Claritin D. And the reason why we are really caution patients on that is because it's like taking a Sudafed or a decongestant, and it has side effects, which could be things like raising your blood pressure because it's clamping down on the blood vessels in your nose, and you're like, oh, I can breathe. But it's also doing it through your entire body because it's an oral tablet. So I have had patients, tell me, my primary can't figure out why I have high blood pressure. And I'm like, it's that Allegra D you've been taking for 10 years. So people won't know that. It's now behind the counter, right? So it's just being mindful of, well, what are you taking? Is it helpful or is it more harmful? But that's antihistamine. So these, again, whatever ones work for you, Some, again, cause drowsiness more than others. So the label will say take in the evening. And yes, so those are the antihistamines. There are no sprays, right? So things like, as you mentioned, Flonase, Nasacort, Rhinocort, and these are nasal steroids. So they will help to decrease the inflammation that's in your nose. So the swelling that causes the congestion, that's what those nose sprays will help for. Recently, there are now antihistamine nose sprays that are available, particularly one called Astapro. And this was prescription until I think 2 years ago, and now it's over the counter. So again, now there's an antihistamine nose spray. The other thing I would caution patients on is decongestant nasal sprays. So things like Afrin, and that's because it usually says it on the box, but we really don't pay attention to it, where it says no more than 3 to 5 days, right? But look, it's working, and we're just using it all the time. Now, 3 to 5 days becomes weeks or months, and it can actually cause you to have what we call a rebound congestion. The medical term for it is actually rhinitis medicamentosa, which is really interesting. So the rhinitis is caused by the medicine, and Afrin and those nasal decongestants are very classic for being a culprit to that. But again, most people don't know this, and we're just kind of using it, you know, like candy. So, you know, we've got tablets, we've got nose sprays. And for those who have eye symptoms, because that sometimes can affect the eyes, then you have eye drops that are now available over the counter as well.
I mean, what about there's the ones that you can just inhale? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Inhalers? So,
or you put it by your nasal passage and you just breathe it in. And it's supposed to naturally like open up your, it's not an actual spray, but they're almost like, how do you say?
It's like vapor? Just say,
yes.
So that's not typically recommended for allergies. I don't know if they still make it, but Vicks used to make like a stick and you would like breathe in and menthol or something. But yes, not something we recommend for allergic rhinitis necessarily. Maybe if you have a cold. To use that. But yes, in terms of inhalers, there's not many asthma inhalers that are available over the counter. Thankfully, most of these are still prescription because we need to really monitor use of things like rescue inhalers or preventative controller inhalers. So yes, definitely speak to your provider and physician about asthma medications.
And then nebulizers, if you could explain that to folks that are trying to maybe have a loved one that needs a nebulizer. What is a nebulizer?
So typically, a nebulizer is a machine that helps deliver medicines a little bit easier than using an inhaler. Because using an inhaler takes coordination, timing of pumping and breathing in. So sometimes that's a little bit more challenging, especially for younger kids, right? So if we're 4 or 5 and can have some breathing episodes, a nebulizer is a great way of delivering the medicine. It usually plugs into a wall. The medicine is a liquid and you stick it into a part of the nebulizer tubing. And then you put on a mask or a little breathing tube and you just kind of breathe in and out and the medicine will make its way into your lungs. So again, there's, you know, typically two types of asthma and respiratory medicines that can fit into a nebulizer. And yes, depending on, you know, your age, what it's for, this can be prescribed by your primary care doctor or your lung specialist.
And how long should we be using these allergy medications? Is there anything detrimental with long-term use that has come up in research? For example, if we have allergies, maybe now it feels like year round, should we be on Claritin for an entire year or should we be taking a pause from them? Like, does our body ever now get adjust to it where we're going to have to switch it up to Zizol, you know?
Yes. So the answer there is, it's really what works for you And then I always have the discussion with my patients about risks and benefits. So you always want to make sure that what you're taking, that the benefits outweigh the risk. But if it's all the other way around, you're drowsy, it's not helping, and the risks are much higher, then we need to be mindful of switching to an alternative and finding one that works. And there are many people who will say, oh, I did Claritin for, you know, 5-10 years. And then all of a sudden my body stopped working or stopped working and my body got used to it. And then they switch to another antihistamine. So in general, I always just tell patients and, you know, families who are asking, if the benefits outweigh the risk, then it's worth considering. But if you're finding that you're taking this for years, decades, then it's worth knowing that there are other options out there, because that can add up. You're going to the store every month or buying it from the big warehouses for 90 days packs. So yes, I, you know, just have that conversation of making sure it's helpful and that the risks are low. And at this point, for at least the second generation antihistamines, those are the Claritin, Zyrtec, Allegra, Zizol, we haven't seen much data that's, you know, concerning. So again, that's now in 2025. But we are cautioning, you know, patients about using things like Benadryl very frequently, because we know that that crosses the blood-brain barrier. And then we're, you know, we have to see if there's any long-term side effects to that. So yes, hopefully that answers the side effects. It's always a risk-benefit ratio thing.
No, sure. I know Sheena asked you earlier about prevention and immune system strengthening. Now, when it comes to looking at our traditional healing practices, like, for example, diet, is there anything that we typically should practice within our culture that maybe we should maintain or explore further as it relates to allergies and asthma, Gina?
So in terms of diet, there's not much, not much data or any particular foods. You know, in general, vitamin C and all of this, getting good sleep, right? All of that would be helpful for just maintaining a good immune system. But some of the more natural therapies can be something as simple as a nasal saline rinse. So you might have seen this or heard about it. There's different companies that make it. But really what this is, are little salt packets that go into a little bottle or a pot. And then that will potentially help flush out the allergens and particles that are in your nose. Some people do it every day. Some decide, oh, I don't like it at all. But it is an option. And again, it's just salt water. So that's something you could potentially use to help flush out the allergens that you're breathing in.
I have a question for you, Gina. For folks that have had an asthma attack, I know I grew up with family members with asthma attacks. Describe what that's like and what a person goes through when they're actually having an attack. And then also, if we're around loved ones or friends that are experiencing an asthma attack, what can we do to support them in that situation?
Yes. So this is a great question, because we know somebody, if not more than one person, who has asthma, right? So what's happening during the asthma attack, which means it's all of a sudden acute symptoms, meaning maybe over time it kind of built up and then it led to this big, you know, symptomatic episode where we're coughing, we're wheezing, we're short of breath. And again, that's the symptoms that somebody will see. And it can be triggered, as we talked about, by different things like getting sick with a cold, being around something that all of a sudden caused our airways to clamp down and get small. The allergens, like that happens really during pollen season. So we see a lot of patients coming in saying, you know, my asthma is acting up, can I see you and get some treatment? So the number one thing, again, as I was mentioning earlier, is to try to remember and figure out what your triggers are, right? So try to avoid them if possible. But once we have these symptoms, which it can be very scary because, you know, we're having trouble breathing, you're seeing people's, you know, shoulders going up and down, and you're like, oh, you know, so the idea is, by not only knowing what your triggers are, but making sure that you're on your preventative medications. So this is usually prescribed, you know, by your primary care doctor, your allergist, your pulmonologist. And so these are medicines that control your symptoms and prevent it, so that it might be something you take every day, whether it's a tablet or an inhaler. So it prevents the swelling and inflammation. So there are, you know, that's one type of inhaler. But the other one are rescue inhalers, typically something called albuterol. And so albuterol will open up the airways within 5 minutes and keep them open for the next 6 hours. And so if you have a family member or friend and you're like, oh, you know, is your asthma being triggered and you need some help, ask them, do you have your rescue inhaler? Because that will help, again, open it up in a few minutes and keep it open for hours, which is why if you do have asthma, really carrying that emergency inhaler with you is crucial, right? So just having it on you at all times, in your purse, you know, in your book bag, if you are in school, you know, when I run, it's in my little pack because I never know if something's going to happen. So it's something that you always kind of want to have on you. And if you have asthma, you're aware that, oh, now I need my rescue inhaler, and that will help. If it gets to the point where you've used your rescue inhaler, two puffs, you know, every couple hours, and it's still not helping or it's more emergent, then definitely get seen more immediately to be able to get emergent or urgent treatment.
Wow. Okay. When we were preparing for this episode, when we were talking about also traditional ways of treatment and medicine, you mentioned allergy shots.
Yes.
I was thinking, what do you mean, like turmeric shots or? Tell us more about what you mean by these allergy shots. Because I don't know that, when I was talking to Sheena about it, we're like, you can get shots for your allergies?
Yes. And so this is a great question, because this is one of the things I'm actually trying to help, you know, spread the word about. Because many people will come to me and say, oh, after I've been on these medicines forever, nobody's ever talked to me that there's another option. And so just being aware of it is something that is the start to knowing that there's more you can do than just taking all these medicines, because the medicines are temporary, right? So you take it, it works for a day, maybe half a day, days you're on it. But the minute you stop taking it, it just takes care of your symptoms, right? And so what these allergy shots are, and the medical term for it is we call it allergen immunotherapy, is actually giving you what you're allergic to. So it's been out for over a century. So it's not anything new, but since 1911, this has been a thing. And the idea behind it is giving you what you're allergic to in your own little vials. So that's why it's important to get tested to find out, well, what are you symptomatic, what causes your symptoms? And then we put it in these little vials, and it's purified extract. So it would be the pollen, the dust mite, the cat, the dog. And we build your immune system by giving you deliberate increasing doses over a period of a couple of months. And then at some point, depending on who you're seeing in the practice protocol, then it's, you know, every 2 to 4 weeks. For 3 to 5 years. So it's really purified extract that is helping to build your immune system, kind of like a vaccine, but with the allergens in it. And it is really life-changing for patients. And until you know about it and know if you qualify or a candidate for it, you may not realize that there's a life outside of just taking all of these medicines. So I have patients who, you know, when we start on this, I'm always like, okay, many of them will actually start because of their pets, right? They're like, okay, give me something because I'm keeping my dog and my cat. I'm like, okay, let's see if you're a candidate for these shots. And even the pollen season, right? So when patients are really affected and they're on medicines for months, here now in the DC area, when we say pollen season, we're talking like February, March until October, November. So if you're on that for 8-9 months out of the year, there's something that's more long-term, and it's actually the only therapy that changes how your immune system responds to the allergens when you encounter them. And because we mentioned earlier that your nose is connected to your lungs, if we help take care of your allergic rhinitis, it will also help to prevent your asthma symptoms. So the reason to consider these allergy shots is if you have allergic rhinitis and or asthma. And so people will say, you know, I thought I was always getting sick, but I wasn't sick. It was just allergies. And once we find out what it is, talk to you about avoidance measures, you know, maybe come up with some medication plans. And if it's like, oh, this is not enough, or you just don't want to be on medicines forever, then the allergy shots are a wonderful option. There's just so many stories with my patients who will say, you know, I used to be on tablets, inhalers, nose sprays, eye drops. And after being on allergy shots for a few months or even years, their symptoms are gone, that they are now not on these medicines. And the idea of being able to see a different life than what you have right now is what I hope to, you know, help educate and empower, you know, your audience on, is to say, look, there's something out there that you might qualify for and be a candidate for that's very natural. There are some risks with it. So, you know, your allergist will talk to you about that. But in general, while everyone around you is like, you know, having symptoms during pollen season, you're like, oh, wow, I'm fine. And I'm not on as many medicines. So know that there is a therapy out there that is tried and true. And your local board certified allergist could offer it to you if you qualify, meaning you're positive on the testing. You've got the symptoms associated when you are around the allergen. And then we can say, look, you qualify. We'll talk about the schedule, how to start this, you know, therapy. And it's long-term. So, you know, 5 years of this will help give you a huge improvement of your quality of life for the remainder of years.
That's pretty incredible. And the fact that it's been around for over a century, we're just kind of now, at least for myself, I didn't know about it prior to this episode, really.
Yes. And no, it's, I've, you know, not only for patients will say, even my spouse will say, oh, I'm not sneezing so much in the morning, because again, we're treating your dust mite allergy, or I can be around the dog a little bit longer because, you know, we're doing something in what we call modifying your immune system, which no other therapy does, right? We're just taking medicines and masking the symptoms. But this one is actually changing how you react to the allergens, which again, there's only so much that avoidance can do, and medications. So just keeping it in the back of your mind, saying there is something more out there, and it can be really life-changing for many patients.
That's definitely true. And speaking of something more out there, share with us more about your family clinic in Rockville. You know, what types of services do you provide and what sort of medical insurance do you accept?
Oh, yes. So my practice, again, is Family Center for Allergy and Asthma in Rockville, Maryland. Again, in the D.C. area, but on the Maryland side. And, you know, we take care of everything from allergic rhinitis, asthma, eczema, because these kind of go together, food allergies, right? So if you have a peanut allergy or shellfish allergy, milk, eggs, when you're an infant, hives, which is a particular type of rash, swelling, a condition we call angioedema. So sometimes hives and swelling can come together. Drug allergies, particularly penicillin allergy. So you might say, oh, my mom told me I was allergic to penicillin. And really, 90% of patients are not. And we could find that out because there is testing available now. So, yeah, many types of different allergic conditions. And yeah, these are, you know, the types of conditions I love helping patients with because, yeah, I'm so passionate about it. And yes, this is, you know, adults all the way down to our little infants. And yeah, insurance-wise. So we set most major commercial insurances, as well as some Medicaid plans as well. So yes, if you happen to be in the DC, Rockville, Maryland area, Montgomery County, come see me and we'd be happy to help.
And what do you have in store for your practice as you expand? You know, share with our community some of your goals that you have within your practice and, you know, sort of what you envision within the realm to support around allergies and asthma.
Yes. So, I actually opened up the practice here in my local community. And, the goal is to be able to serve as many patients who need us with allergies, with asthma, but then also be able to give back. And so, when we're more established, I really want to be able to sponsor certain organizations and support them, and really just get our name out there because I'm helping, my daughter's classmates and, my fellow moms who, need our help during pollen season with their asthma and allergies. And so it's really my passion is trying to help my local community so that we can all kind of live better, breathe better, and live a good quality of life, so that we can enjoy our time, with ourselves, with our family, and really just live our best life. So that's why my motto is helping our patients live their best life.
That's our motto too, so we love that. So being that we are a health and wellness podcast, you know from our previous episode that you did that we typically like to ask our guests what their own wellness and self-care practice consists of. So in addition to running and yoga, have you acquired any new self-care or wellness practices that you haven't told us about yet?
So I have two. The first one is very simple, and most people might not think of it as a wellness practice, but getting restful and adequate sleep. Right? And so for me, that is a big self-care thing where, I've learned to now do some things or now remove some things that I used to do, right? Like scrolling before bedtime. And I'm like, look, my self-care routine is that I've got to put myself in a good mindset before I go to bed. I do a gratitude journal and I do all of these things that, fill my cup before I go to bed. And again, sleep, which we don't think about, but it's really taking care of yourself, right? And then the second one is really spending time, quality time with family and friends. So that just really, if it means we drive back up to New York and New Jersey to see, my parents or cousins, like that's really what for me fills my cup and just helps me to keep going, to take care of myself and give back to others.
Well, as we begin to close, how can our community reach you if they'd like to schedule a consultation or appointment with you? Do you do virtual if people are not in Maryland? If they have additional questions after listening to this episode, what's the best way to be in contact with you, Gina?
Yes. So you can reach us on our website at depoolallergy.com. I'm also on Instagram and Facebook at drdepool.allergy. So drdepool.allergy. And yes, I see patients here locally in the DC area. Yes, after the health emergency changed, the telemedicine, options have changed as well. But I can see patients, virtually in the state of Maryland. And yeah, if you're here in the area, I'd be happy to see you. So yes, feel free to reach out on our website, on social media. And when I get my YouTube channel up and running, which is hopefully soon, because I'm trying to prep for pollen season. Then you can check me out on YouTube at, again, drdepool.allergy.
And then, since we're a global podcast, if folks want to get in contact with our local allergy specialist or look for a provider near them, do you have any other resources that you could share for them to help get in contact with other providers?
Oh, yes, of course. So this is actually similar to the pollen website that I'd shared earlier. It's www.aaaai.org. So that's four A's and an I.org. Again, American Academy of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology. This is a global organization, and you can find allergists in your country. I actually had to look up some patients when they were moving out of the United States to Thailand and some other. And so you can put in, there's a bar on there that will say find an allergist immunologist, and then you can type in your country, scroll down into choosing that, and then it will help you find somebody who is part of our organization that's usually an allergist immunologist and in your local country or state. So that's a great resource for those who are international.
Do you have any workshops coming up? Any other seminars, courses, articles that folks could read about?
So I will, I just did another podcast a couple weeks ago, and hopefully if I'm able to, set some, webinars up, something similar to this, I'll be sure to post it on my social media so that I can get everybody, prepared for our pollen season.
Don't forget to tag us in the process.
Yes, for sure.
Final words, Dr. Gina. Is there anything else that you want our community throughout the diaspora to know when it comes to allergies and asthma?
Yes. So I would say, that one of my passions, as I said, is to help people like myself and patients with these conditions, and that there is hope, right? And so sometimes we kind of give up and thinking, oh, this is what I have and this is what I live with. But if there's anything that I can see personally, as well as when I, help treat my patients, is that there is something that we can do so that you can not only feel better, but that you can live the life that you're wanting to live. Right? If you want to spend time with your grandchildren, or if you want to travel the world, or exercise, play pickleball or tennis, or any of these things, run marathons, triathlons, really getting help and finding a great provider or physician who will be your care team member is possible. Like I said, if you're in Maryland, happy to help you and be on this journey with you. But yes, know that there are options out there. And you just have to be able to find somebody who you can trust with your health so that you can get to the places and goals and achievements that you're looking to achieve.
Thank you again, Dr. Gina, for talking with us about allergic rhinitis and asthma. We look forward to witnessing your journey unfold as you continue to offer healing to our community. We'll also continue to help share your upcoming opportunities, so don't forget to tag us as we stay connected in partnership.
And to our community, for our next episode, we are happy to invite to our podcast Dr. Marinette Asuncion Oy, licensed clinical psychologist, aka the Brown Psych on Instagram, to talk to us about mastering healthy boundaries for Filipinos in line with Mental Health Awareness Month. Stay tuned for this episode, which will air on Wellness Wednesday, May 14th. As we close, we'd like to acknowledge once again our guest speaker, Dr. Gina DePaul Hidalgo. Thank you again. Our art director, Richie, our advisors, Allison De La Cruz, Rian De Los Reyes, Safo Teologo, our social media strategist, Kathleen Torrio, our outreach manager and production assistant, Maya Custodio, our community partners, SoCal Filipinos, the Filipino American Life, Rising Filipinas, Therapinay, and all of our community members for your shares and your support. As always, we'll share more about our guest offering on our IG stories and highlights for permanent access with any other upcoming events. Be sure to follow us on at Philippine and Wellness on IG Threads, FB, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Don't forget to continue to hit like and subscribe on our Philippine X and Wellness YouTube channel. And thank you always for believing in us.
Be well, everyone. Continue to take care of yourselves and each other.
Salamat.
Maraming salamat.
Salamat kaayad.